This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Back at Bar Canada at the D, it's our final hour of Sharp Money here on VSIN, the sports betting network, tracking some day baseball. Olympics underway with the U.S. Women's National Team, 3-0 win over Zambia, one we were really locked into all day today. Tough luck loser if he had the over, though. Three goals in the first 25 minutes, zilch after that. He's Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Ben Wilson. Final hour here of the show. You got one more baseball bet today, Dustin. Excited to hear that as well.
Well, it's on my Metsies. We'll touch on that momentarily.
Yes, we will. First, though, been a good NFL show as well as we build up toward the Hall of Fame game, which is a week away. Preseason, just past that. Everybody now in training camp as we go out to our progressive guest line here to start this hour on a guy who has done a fantastic deep dive in a lot of senses here. Fantasy, betting, you name it, Mike Tenier from FTN Fantasy. And check out his Two Deep Zone Substack. You were doing a deep dive, Dustin, the other night. Really, really good stuff on that for Mike. Welcome, Mike. Really appreciate the time here. Hope your prep is going well here as we get towards the start of the preseason. As far as some overarching themes, I guess news of the day, we're always kind of reacting right to news of the day and then flipping it forward to, you know, what we think about those teams in particular. Niners are really that team in the news here with the Trent Williams holdout at O-line, Brandon Ayuk the hold in at wide receiver. But from a longer-term perspective, while we assume those deals eventually will get worked out, what do you make of a Niners team here that is the talk of the NFC coming into this season?
You're absolutely right. You assume everything will be quiet again in a week or two. And then you ask the question, is this going to have that big an impact on this team moving forward? And for the 49ers, you know, especially from a wagering perspective, you're thinking in terms of Super Bowl. Last time I checked, 49ers to reach the Super Bowl, we're at plus 250. And I'll tell you, I'm one of the co-authors of the FTN Fantasy Almanac, where we do fantasy and projections. And we have the 49ers at a plus 215 to make the Super Bowl. So like for what we're looking at, like that's a plus 250 is a good value. The question is, how comfortable are you taking this team all the way to that level when you're kind of having all of these financial situations and these contract situations right now? I worry. I'm not there in terms of saying I would make some kind of big investment for this team to do this, because there's a real chance that if this team actually starts to slide, they're going to slide. They're going to start pointing fingers and it's going to be an issue. That's a little bit of a worry when you're like looking weeks and weeks down the road at a Super Bowl.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I want to shift over to the AFC, a team that's been a juggernaut on the other side of things. And we're all making a big deal, Mike, because that's what we do when we see these things happen. Well, the Bills lost their secondary. Well, the Bills lost this. But most glaringly, we look and say, hold on. There's no more Stephon Diggs. There's no more Gabe Davis. And we assume that's going to be the biggest issue for the Bills this upcoming season. But you say it's actually something else for Buffalo.
It's the schedule. And I don't want to minimize necessarily the loss of Diggs in particular. I think that that's going to have an impact. Although they brought in some younger guys, they brought in Keon Coleman as a rookie, et cetera. There's no replacement for Stephon Diggs. But you have to worry about the schedule. And according to the FTN Almanac, toughest schedule in the NFL. You can just look at that division and you can see, you know, the difficulties going to face. They are going to face the Chiefs. They're going to face the 49ers. And you have to look at that when you start looking at win totals, Super Bowl odds, et cetera. One thing I noticed, I was just looking at them right now. I have a feeling that schedule and the loss of Diggs is priced in right now, because I see them at 10.5. I saw the over at 10.5 being like plus 130. Well, if you take the Bills down that level, then you're looking at a team will say, well, I think even with these losses, they can win 11 games. Even with that tough schedule, they can win 11 games. I mean, they've got Josh Allen, great offensive line, great defense, et cetera. It's when you get up to that next level and say, okay, are we looking at this as a Super Bowl team? Be careful, because I think that it's going to be harder than it might look on paper.
Mike Tenier with us here on Sharp Money, at Mike Tenier, T-A-N-I-E-R. Check out his Two Deep Zone Substack as well. As long as we're talking schedules here, a team that has gotten a lot of hype, mostly getting bet to the over here, it's a very easy strength to schedule by opposing win totals, but not very good on the rest edges. A lot of short weeks or opponents with extra time to prepare against the L.A. Chargers this year, who positionally have a lot of holes still on that roster. But there's a lot of assumption just being baked in here that you have Jim Harbaugh coming in as a head coach, and it will be an immediate resuscitation project for you. How quickly do you expect things to turn around for L.A., and are we placing too much of that immediate expectation here on a coach in Harbaugh, who has obviously done wonders in the NFL?
You're exactly right about the immediate expectations. I am taking a glance at the schedule right now, and there's all kind of little surprises in there that you might not see right away. Road stands that go across the country and things like that. But I really think the Chargers are shockingly overvalued right now. And again, we got projections at the FTN Almanac, and they should be to reach the playoffs a plus 470, according to the DVOA projections. They're plus 110. That's a huge disparity. And where does it come from? And I think it comes from the halo around Jim Harbaugh, who, you know, yesterday was talking about how he was describing his own birth. He was explaining that it's like being born in graphic detail and being back in camp. It's great. He's a colorful character that's not going to win many games in 2024. Maybe 25, 26 when the program's established, when he has more bodies. There's a halo with his reputation, a halo with Justin Herbert's reputation. The rest of the lineup is not a playoff caliber roster.
All right. There is a team out there, Mike, that I am unjustifiably high on, and I can't put a reason for it. And people are going to think I'm crazy. And I don't mean they're going to win the Super Bowl. I just think they're better than they're being perceived. And you wrote about them. I think a transition at quarterback for Tennessee, or at head coach for Tennessee, going to Brian Callahan, opening up this offense, giving Will Levis a chance to see what he is, but giving him a plethora of weapons here. I don't know. I'm a little bullish that they're going to mess up some people's bets along the way this season. When you look at the Tennessee Titans, what are you seeing?
Kind of the same thing, and the numbers back this up a little bit. That again, FTN thinks they should be plus 265. House was around plus 425. I think I checked that this morning. It's another one of those misperception teams where we kind of look at the Titans and we look at Will Levis and we look at a new coach and we look at some of the older guys they brought in. You know, you bring Tyler Boyd in and people are like, yeah, whatever. Jamal Adams, whatever. They brought in Lajarius Sneed. They brought in Chidi Awuzie. They brought in you know, other guys who can play along the way, certainly Calvin Ridley. And is this a great long-term plan for like building a Super Bowl 2 years down the road? It doesn't look like that. There's too many older veterans. Is this a plan that could get you to 8 wins? Maybe get you to 9 wins and get your young quarterback and Levis developing along the way? I think it can. And I think that's another situation where this team, you know, has reasonable chances to be the seventh playoff seed, has reasonable chances to win more games than they're projected to right now. And that's reflected in some of the stuff that we've done with statistical analysis.
Mike Tenier with us on our Progressive Guest Line, talking all things NFL here coming into 2024. I can't help but, you know, just looking at some of the, you know, position by position stuff, FTN, a great resource for that as well. I like that FTN actually ranks special teams too, which for us is better.
Yeah.
I mean, is massive. And this is, we're not talking, you know, special teams for fantasy, but the actual units, which I found super valuable doing that deep dive, Mike. I've looked at, you know, what I think what kind of surprised me, not the teams at the top, you know, based on power rating, if you're averaging all these positional groups by division and team, but the teams at the bottom, like I figured the Giants would not look very good, but I mean, they came in rock bottom for me. I had Giants 32. Is it that bad in your mind when you look at how things are constructed for a Giant team that only 2 years ago was a playoff roster?
Yeah, you can go up and down their roster. You start with your quarterback, Daniel Jones, who's not going to really make anybody's top 20 list, let's put it that way, among starters. And then you go to running back where Saquon's gone, Dalvin Singletary's in his place. That's a net negative. You can go to the receiver core, and it's like, yeah, they got Neighbors. He's a rookie. They've got nothing else that you're excited about. Offensive line, they got one good player. Defensive line, okay, they've got two or three good players. You go up and down the roster, and not only is it a weak roster, but it's a weak roster where it's hard to project anyone but like Neighbors, like taking a step forward. Like, it's full of veterans who this is who they are. They're not going to get any better. And that projects to like a 5 or 6 win team. So yeah, they're at the bottom of the standings. If I did it in a list, I would do it that way. The Almanac does it that way. I think a lot of people are seeing this team the same way.
All right, Mike, we live in this world in the betting community where we want to get ahead of numbers. And one thing that always scares me is when I love a bet, and every sharp person I know loves the same bet. You normally think, well, he's a sharp person. You want to be in their group. But one of the trendiest plays you will see everywhere is Jared Goff MVP. And there's a lot of reasons to like it. He went from 40-1 to 30-1. I don't see anywhere better than 25-1 now. Can Jared Goff legitimately be an MVP candidate this year?
I think he absolutely can. And I think what you're talking about, the sharp bet, is the meat on the bone there. If he's up around plus 2,000, it gets up too high there. You're not going to love it there. But yeah, the path to victory is to be the, not necessarily the best quarterback in the NFL, but the quarterback on the best team and the quarterback who has proven he can be successful on great teams. And that's what Jared Goff can be there. I think if I was looking for reasons to be concerned, other than Amon-Ra St. Brown, I don't see that other like wide receiver that comes in and says, well, this takes him over the top. But, you know, you can absolutely see it. He's had success in the past. He had success last year. The stats are there. If the Lions are this runaway, you know, them and the 49ers are running away with the NFC, Goff's going to get a lot of attention as an MVP candidate.
He is Mike Tenier from FTN Fantasy. Does a great Substack as well. Give him a follow-up. Mike Tenier as well joining us here on our Progressive Guest Line. It is the Two Deep Zone Stubstack. You really liked it, Dustin. Give a shout-out here as we go off.
Look, the information at FTN's great. We have our boy Mike Randall on Sharp Money every Tuesday. And Mike, with his Substack, just an extension, more great information that you can use, right, to place bets. It's actionable. Yep.
It is. I love it. Very, very good. Mike, as always, man, appreciate it. We know it's a busy time for you, everybody over at the team there, getting ready for the start of the year. Really appreciate the time.
You got it. Take care and enjoy the rest of your week.
We absolutely will. We will have more NFL to talk about in a little bit. Right now, I should update things. This is another classic example. We were talking earlier, Dustin, in the show of when you were high or down on a pitcher trying to isolate props. It can be so hard because not everything is created equal. You know, Clayton Kershaw has certainly not looked very sharp today, probably not going more than four innings, but he did strike out six.
Yeah.
He goes over his K prop, even though he was getting shelled out there. And I doubt he will come back for a fifth inning here down 2-1 in the game. But baseball in a nutshell.
I'd actually put that up with some of the most challenging bets you can place is the fact that you can like a pitcher, but you may not choose the right avenue to back them when it comes to betting props.
I mean, imagine if you like the Dylan Cease under walks today. Guy throws a no-hitter. He goes over his walk prop. Go figure. We'll talk about some of the other action as well coming up later today in the MLB card when we return right here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now at VSiN.com, plenty of horse racing bets from our Mike Somich, Adam Burke on Major League Baseball, as well as the 3M Open, which is now underway from the Twin Cities. Wes Reynolds with a full breakdown right now at VSiN.com, along with betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. Optimized for mobile. Fresh look at VSiN.com. I'm Ben Wilson, back with Dustin Sweetelson, where we are continuing on some day baseball. I'm trying to figure out what is going on in these rugby matches. That's a thing. That's part of the Olympics where you watch these random sports and you're like, I have no idea what's happening, but I see the scoreboard change.
You know, I just went to VSiN.com, opened up the betting tools, and there's a picture of your face there.
Really?
The betting tool.
I'm a tool.
Someone isolate that audio for me, please. Someone isolate Ben saying that. I can do something with it later.
Am I really on the
website? No, no. I'm calling you a betting tool.
No way.
All right. So here's where we're at. Logan Webb. I'm on his over hits.
He's getting hammered. He's got two more.
Four hits so far. I need the Dodgers to keep piling it on. He's only at 62 pitches.
I think he just gave up his fifth hit.
Oh, are we at five now?
Yeah,
so I'm two away.
Not a good fantasy day for me.
No, well, again, Logan Webb on the road strikes again. This is what he does, folks. He's just most pitchers are better at home, and that'll play a role in my next handicap here. But Logan Webb on the road this year, 4.09 ERA, 3 on the dot at home. And for his career, it's just as bad. He's just one of those guys, for whatever reason, sleeping in his own bed, doing his own routine, works better for him. And also, he plays in a great pitcher's park there in San Francisco where the wind blows.
Also, your other bet we're talking about here live, you need, what, 18.5 outs for Todd Bradley?
I need 16.5.
Oh, so you're good.
Yeah,
you got it.
The number just jumped. It was way too low. He's one of the hottest pitchers in baseball. His ERA is under 2.5 now. He's been incredible for over a month at this point. Taj Bradley's becoming an ace in front of our eyes.
I was going to express some concern for you simply because the Rays are up 10-0 now, top of the seventh. And if he was at 18.5, you'd be worried about him even being trotted out there to get another out in the bottom half of the seventh inning. Also, the other final today while we've been on the air, Max Scherzer strikes out 9. Will he be moved at the deadline? 6 innings one earned, albeit against the White Sox at home, but the Rangers beat Chicago 2-1 there today. And that guy's been, it's been unbelievably polarizing, Dustin, when you think about the contract and how much he's got left in the tank, and do teams want to take on that money? Should the Rangers be sellers? I mean, they're still way back in their own division and wild card races. It's interesting. You wouldn't think Max Scherzer would be so polarizing for a guy of his ilk, yet he kind of has been this year.
Well, he's old.
That's
he doesn't have much left in the tank.
Costs a lot of money.
Now, here's what I'd say. Here's what I'd say. Well, the Mets are paying his contract. The Mets paid him to trade him to the Rangers. They got Luis Angel Acuna in the deal back. I'm curious if the Mets want some pitching depth. Maybe they don't have to pay a high price to go get the guy they're already paying on the payroll anyway. Go bring Scherzer back, because the Texas Rangers are sellers. The world champs are not going to the playoffs. It's been just a mess for them. I don't necessarily trust Scherzer, but I would like the depth of that veteran. However, he's 39 years old. Ash is going to turn 40 in 2 days.
Wow.
So congratulations, Max. In 2 days, you will be a man, according to Mike Gundy.
There we go. Mike Gundy Day coming up for Max Scherzer. Six, again, it was the White Sox, but six innings, one run today on 9 Ks. The Mets, as a result, even though Scherzer, they're still paying him, Mets playing great baseball. Take on Chris Sale tonight. Big NL East divisional battle gets underway. Fresh off of the Mets sweep of the Subway Series. Dustin, you've got action tonight here. Luis Severino going against Chris Sale. And we've seen a flip of favorites here in a lot of spots as the Mets opened its dogs in some shops. Now you're looking at really more of a pick 'em to -108 is the high watermark I'm seeing in the market right now.
So it depends on how you want to evaluate what's gone on the last few days with the rainouts. Chris Sale was supposed to start a couple nights ago thanks to a bunch of rainouts. He's been pushed all the way back to Thursday here, and he's going to take on Severino. I do think it's a positive for him coming off the All-Star break to get a little bit of rest in there. And we look at this matchup with the Mets. Obviously, the Mets have all the momentum facing the Yankees and sweeping them for the season. Severino's on the hill, and I got to tell you, Luis Severino's been a lot better than I ever anticipated being for the Mets. He's probably not a number two. He's probably a really good number three in a successful playoff team. But at home, he's got a 2.82 ERA, whereas on the road, he's 4.42. This game back in Citi Field, Chris Sale on the bump on the other side. I think Chris Sale could shut down this Mets lineup, and then we're going to look at Severino against a Braves lineup. No Acuna, no Albies. They're on the road where they're a little bit worse across the board. I'm going to go first five under four, lay $1.30 juice, but I do like that first five under four. I thought it was going to be 3.5 with Sale on the hill for Atlanta, and I think we're getting a good number there. I'll take the under.
And I think just about most books now, there's maybe a couple strays still hanging out at four, but most are going to 3.5. This will probably close market-wide 3.5. So it's a good way to get in front of it. Fours, especially for these first fives. It's one of those weird things in baseball. You don't want to be betting many under eights because of extra innings, full game, but under fours, first five are very, very good bets.
And you've known me a while now, Ben. You know I hate the Mets, right? So it's very hard for me to come around on their success.
But you feel like you're buying in.
No, I'm all in.
It feels like you've definitely been a believer.
It's that chemistry. It's the vibes. It's the never being out of it. It's believing in the team. It's the sum of the parts. It's a lot of it's David Stearns. I just think their VP of ops, you know very well. I think he knew who he wanted, but he needed data with them together to show them what they need to do to improve. And that's why they got off to a rough start. Another reason why they got off to a rough start, the schedule was tough. And here at Circa, they post every month, most wins in each month. They do not have August up yet. I will make you a case for the New York Mets for August. Pull that schedule up, Ben. It's going to blow your mind.
Oh, boy.
The five worst teams in baseball record-wise, the Angels, the Athletics, the Rockies, the Marlins, and the White Sox. The Mets have 14 games in the month of August against those five teams.
Wow.
They play the five worst teams in all of baseball. Also, the White Sox, it's only two versus them, three versus the others. White Sox will be post-trade deadline. All these teams, any parts that a successful team wants, it's going to be off the roster. We're looking at the bottom of the barrel of the bottom of the barrel. I think the Mets, when the numbers posted, whatever it is, I'm betting them to lead the month of August with the most wins.
Really the only tough series in August, home against Baltimore.
Yep.
At San Diego, I would throw in at Arizona with that as well, but you're getting... You get Miami at home, A's at home. You're going to Seattle, but Seattle's, what, 9-20 since mid-June?
Yeah.
Just been playing terrible baseball, can't score. At Colorado, you have a one-off random makeup game in St. Louis.
Yep.
And then three in LA. Yeah, it's not bad.
Kodai Senga makes his return for the Mets tomorrow. You get your ace back. That's an improvement. You envision post-trade deadline, they will add some bullpen arms because that is the biggest need they have. They could also use some better bench options. I'm sick of watching DJ Stewart. I can't believe it's still happening, but they don't have anyone else at the moment. So, in theory, the teams, those bad teams I mentioned that they're facing will all be worse, and the Mets, we should project their roster to be improved in some regard.
That's a good way to look at it. No, I fully support that thought. I mean, they've done it once already this year. You're not going to get the same length of number on that. But, you know, the other one I was, at least, you know, from early on looking at it, because any of these AL Central teams, I'm just automatically, you know, super intrigued. But Twins have a pretty soft schedule. You get the Cubs and White Sox. Admittedly, you also have series, and you get a Rangers team that by that point will have sold. And admittedly, you also you do have your teams within the division. You have one series against the Guardians and the Royals, but that has been a death march of a division this year with how good those teams have been. That's at least an interesting one, simply because you get both terrible Chicago teams at least once in that month. Although Minnesota not been the most trustworthy team. I don't know if you watched any of their first series out of the break, Dustin, but not great on the bullpen right now.
Well, they're also not healthy. Three of their best hitters out of the line. Royce Lewis.
That's kind of the thought, right? Yeah. If they come back right next week or so, that would be part of that thought.
Miranda's been a revelation. He's hitting again. He did not hit a year ago. Royce Lewis, I saw in the minors, was playing second base. I think that's an interesting wrinkle for him. Correa got to get healthy as well, which is like the story of his career. I hate the Minnesota Twins every single year, Ben, and every single year they end up making the playoffs. They're 4.5 back of Cleveland. And Cleveland, by the way, I do feel like a team, it's weird. They used to be a team built around pitching and light hitting. Now it's the opposite under Stephen Vogt. They're very aggressive at the plate. They're hitting early in the count. And the pitching, while it's not, doesn't have Shane Bieber, lacks that ace, it's really solid. For some reason, I think they're better built for the regular season than playoffs.
No, I'm with you. And it's been weird to see it flip in that way for the Guardians. You kind of figure between the Guardians and the Brewers, those are the two teams who have exceeded all expectations. You kind of feel like one of them comes back down to earth at the very least here down the home stretch. Only one of the game fours tonight. It's a super light card. I did not make any pregame baseball bets today. Do anything with Kenny Rosenberg's third appearance of the year for the Angels at home against Ross Stripling of the A's. The A's who at least opened in some shops as favorites here, but that has flipped now to the Angels.
I went to Hebrew school with a Kenny Rosenberg at Monroe Temple Bethel. No, our boy John Bowman did send me in a pic. John Bowman, baseball at Bowman on Twitter, at John Bowman 11. Nice. He is on the A's, and he got them at even money. It's now -102. He liked backing Ross Stripling in this spot. So I don't have a play, but that's available. VSiN.com/picks along with all the other picks I had today.
Certainly have the pitching edge on that. All right, when we come back, some college football talk for the first time. We'll go to Bill Bender from the Sporting News, who's standing by from Big Ten Media Days. A lot to talk about the Big Ten this year and all the new look there. We'll discuss the latest odds with Bill in college football when we come back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the DR. Final half hour on this Thursday edition of Sharp Money. I'm Ben, in for Patrick today and tomorrow. Dustin is here. We've got baseball action. At least Dustin does the rest of the night. We're about to talk some college football because it is talking season. We love it, mostly just to make fun of it, Dustin, if anything. But also it helps shape our first initial views here as we get ready for previews for this 2024 season. And we'll start by going out to the Big Ten Media Days in Indianapolis, out on our progressive guest line, where Bill Bender, great to give us some time here, as always, on Sharp Money from Sporting News. Bill, part of the chaos, the scene going on there at Indy. Bill, I'm purely from the media perspective, a very bizarre situation being there. You get the California teams coming in, new look Big Ten this year. What have you made just some of these? We've talked so much about the Deshaun Foster angle, first off, for UCLA, but just in general, the new coaches for this conference coming in, they know how hard it is based on teams who went to the Big 12 last year. What's been the general takeaway from those coaches and how they're prepared to handle what is certainly a unique and difficult transition coming into a new league?
Yeah, it was surreal. You know, when you see USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington, as a kid that grew up in Big Ten country, it is wild. Yeah. Now, I will say this about Deshaun Foster. I know that made the rounds, but his breakout podium was much more. He was fine. You know, he had like one of the, I do it all the time. I do it on the radio, guys. But I understand, you know, that's a running backs coach that's trying to take over a program. He was kind of thrust into it. He's going to have to adjust to that part of it. But I think from, you know, talking to his players, they believe in what he's trying to do, and he has that NFL experience to try to go out and do it.
Yeah, look, at the Big Ten this year, another team from L.A. comes in with USC, although a little bit less fanfare than you would expect year one for the Trojans, just because it feels like it is a two-team race, and I think the voting in the media poll proves that, Bill. Ohio State, Oregon, those are the two teams with the loftiest expectations. Where do you see USC fitting into the picture here in the Big Ten year one?
Well, you wouldn't know that talking to Lincoln Riley. I mean, he's very confident. Very confident that Danson Lynn is going to help shape up a defense that we all know was pretty bad. They're going to have offense. They're going to score. Their style is going to be very interesting mix with the other Big Ten schools. But, you know, it's easy. It's also easy to forget that, hey, Lincoln Riley, I mean, he knows how to coach. He's been to playoffs, and he insisted that they're ahead of schedule from where they were. And I tend to believe him when you think they're probably not as – they probably don't win as many games the last 2 years if Caleb Williams isn't their quarterback. So they've got to build everything else and get ready for those challenges, like you said, against Oregon, Ohio State. And I think we can get to it whenever, but we're undervaluing Michigan just a touch.
He is Bill Bender joining us at BillBender92, Sporting News senior college football writer. It's an interesting point, at least on the betting markets, where we've seen lots of under money come in on Michigan. And the natural question, Bill, to follow is, at what point does that become too much and we start to see value going the other way? Since you brought it up, let's just go right there with the Michigan team. That, I mean, I'm seeing them close to, you know, near two digits as far as the dogs when we look at the game of the year lines against Ohio State. Not much expected out of Michigan in this first year sans Jim Harbaugh in Ann Arbor. What's the expectations that you have after talking at Media Days?
Well, I think, you know, they're going to have to find the right quarterback, whether it's Jack Tuttle or Alex Orji, whoever. Their defense is going to be good. And you know, they're switching two coordinators. I get all that. It's going to be really interesting to see. I think all that money and all those bets, they go after the Texas game. That's really the first, all right, let's see what you got. You lost 13 guys to the NFL draft. What's going to happen when they play the Longhorns? That's the big test game for me, and I think it's a toss-up game. It's still in Ann Arbor, and Texas lost a lot on their defense too. That's going to be an absolute blast watching that one in early September.
At 3.5 right now, Texas favored on the road in Ann Arbor. Michigan 10-point dogs. At least these are DK lines taking on Ohio State. I guess the biggest of all the storylines in the Big Ten this year, Bill, it's just this weird feeling where you have Ryan Day in a put up or shut up season. Yet his team is absolutely stacked on paper. Yet you kind of feel like, right, no coach under the microscope more than Ryan Day in Columbus. It's just a very odd dynamic when you look at it from the, you know, the 10,000 foot perspective. Like we are.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I can't think of a coach that the pressure, though, is a little it's a little deceiving to me, you know, because they're still loaded. He was loose at Big Ten Media Day, and I think part of that probably is because, yeah, I got pretty loaded roster. I'm gonna be pretty good. And you know, when you have 11 players come back that were supposed to go to the NFL draft, and Caleb Downs and Quinshon Judkins and Will Howard come in, they're going to be good. And I really think that is something to watch with this team, that how good can they be? And you know, the Michigan game's obviously a huge piece of this puzzle, but I also think that they're going to be ready for that challenge.
Bill Bender with us here. Sorry, Dustin, on Sharp Money.
Matt Rhule, Bill, he's won everywhere. Yes. Everyone loves to talk about it.
Matt
Rhule. And he's worked with more dire situations that he's had than Nebraska. And it feels like the program is more committed to playing in this NIL world, obviously made some splashes in the offseason. You look at Nebraska this season, 7.5 is their win total here in Vegas. What is the perception from the rest of the league about the Huskers this season?
Man, you're going to know early because their schedule's set up for a little bit of a fast start. At least I see it that way. I don't know if you guys do. And I'll definitely have a chance to win some games early. Play Ohio State there in October. Dylan Raiola definitely can get that offense going a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, expectations are super high for Matt Rhule. And you said it. I mean, I go off track record. You know, the way he built Temple took a couple years and then got him going. The way he built Baylor, and they played the Big 12 championship game. So I think that they can get to a bowl game this year. That 7's tricky, because I think 7-5, 8-4 would be their ceiling to me, because they're still going to, you know, have some lessons along the way. But I'm really intrigued to see what Dylan Raiola does for that offense. And Matt Rhule, I'll tell you, if there's a winner on the podium, that type guy, he's one of those guys. He's just so good in that situation.
As we go back toward the top here of the, at least the projected standings in the Big Ten with Bill Bender, and you gave out your college football, the playoff predictions, Ohio State to win the Big Ten, which is certainly by most people power rated the number one team going in. But then there's Oregon, and that's the big question of how close is that gap this year between Oregon and Ohio State, which is a near pick'em line when Ohio State has to go to Eugene later on in the season. For Oregon, how much is there right now, in your opinion, to be that 1B to Ohio State's 1A? As we start the season in the Big Ten?
I was impressed with Dylan Gabriel, you know, a veteran quarterback. He's, you know, with us, he's heard every question, been around. He's been hyper-efficient every stop. I think he should be a guy that you should keep an eye on with the Heisman, given what Bo Nix did the last couple years. I mean, I don't think that's unreasonable. And that October 12th game against Ohio State, I could see that line shifting depending on how these teams do in September. Because that's a tough game for the Buckeyes. That's their first real, like, real road test, real tough football game. And the thing that's hard to gauge, because we're in a 12-team college football playoff era, is they'll probably play twice. They may play three times. And that's the hard part. That's the part I'm having a hard time sorting out.
With Oregon, Ohio State, that's a pick'em there at DK for that October 12th game right now. Gabriel has moved in a lot of shops to favorite or co-favorite to win the Heisman down to 8-1 there in a lot of places. I think the most notable thing, Bill, is as we're talking here Big Ten football, is that at least in the 12-team playoff predictions, which is so hard this year since it's our first year having the expanded playoff, but you put Michigan in over a Penn State. It's a year where Penn State's still getting a lot of hype with Drew Aller back at quarterback. A lot of expectations there. Is that third team on the odds board? What's your thought there on the Nittany Lions, who have a easier schedule at least to start, but do have a couple of really tough tests as we get down into the home stretch there?
Yeah, and they have to win those games, because let's say both of those teams finish 10-2. Who are they going to give the benefit of the doubt to on the schedule? They'd give it to Michigan. I mean, look at their schedule. They play Texas, Oregon, USC, Washington, Ohio State, and Penn State plays Ohio State and USC. So, yeah, I mean, this is I heard the phrase from, I believe it was Aaron Taylor told me this week, that the 12-team playoff is custom made for a program like Penn State. I couldn't agree more, because if we were in a 12-team setup the last, 10 years, Penn State would probably have 5 or 6 playoff appearances.
100%. Good chance to be 7-0 going into the home game against Ohio State November the 2nd. So many storylines, as always, within the Big Ten. Bill Bender joining us from the Sporting News at BillBender92. Always great to have you on, Bill. I know we'll catch up here again before the season gets underway. Thanks again.
Hey, thanks for fitting me in today, guys. I appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Of course. Always. Do it.
He does an awesome job. Yes. He brought up the Dylan Gabriel thing, and that market, maybe we can get into it in the next segment. I was a Dylan Gabriel Heisman backer 2 years ago at 25-1. I backed him last year at 20-1.
Not a great losing ticket.
I cannot bet him at +750 as the favorite on the board when there is so much chaos this year. He could win the award. I don't disagree with Bill in any way. I do think he can win the award. There's just so many juicy options with what's on the line. The way the 12-team playoff has allowed for more Heisman moments to be possible late in the year. That's the difference. We lived in a world for so long where one loss season was over. These pressure-packed moments were bigger. Now, teams getting in the playoffs can have their Heisman moment towards the end of the year by finding a way to edge a team for a final playoff spot.
Number matters, and you were getting 13-14-1 on Gabriel when those odds were first posted. It's a lot different bet to make now at +750.
Logan Dustin, Webb, 7 hits allowed. Let's go.
There we go.
2-0.
Way to go, Dustin.
Good day. Good day.
Big day for Dustin here on Sharp Money. Get some final thoughts when we come back. Also, how is that UCLA win total moved? We'll get you an update on that after the Sean Foster presser yesterday as we wrap things up right after this.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
If you've not done so already, check out our new look, VSiN.com. All the best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. Optimized for mobile. Whole lot of great content up right now at our website, VSiN.com. As we're back for the final time here at Bar Canada at the D, big thanks to our whole crew as well behind the scenes. Got to Andrew, Larry, Matt, Taylor. I think I got it all, Dustin. Anybody else?
That's everyone back there.
That's everybody.
Unless we're hiding people I don't know about, and hopefully the government's not listening.
Hopefully, yeah. Thank you for always making it a dark turn. Anyway, I miss you, man. Good to be back, Dustin. That was a long 3-week stretch you were gone.
I have so many notes that I learned on my vacation. Let me share one with you. Yeah. I think there's a conspiracy out there. I went on long walks. I was in Georgia. We go on these like 5-mile walks through the woods and all that, just get my cardio in. And I saw a lot of squirrels. You know what I didn't see? Chipmunks. I think the squirrels have killed all the chipmunks and they're taking over the trees. Conspiracy.
That is not a direction I expected the show to go in today.
You're welcome.
Okay. Look, I'm a big nature guy. I never would have thought about the hierarchy of the, you know, the dueling small animal that runs up trees.
But you mean forest rodents?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know who else loves good conspiracy? Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers.
Now it's a segue.
Is now at New York Jets training camp. However, he was not at OTAs a while back. It was an excused absence. And when he met with the media, they made him talk about that and explain where he was.
Obviously more of an issue outside the building than it was inside the building. Robert and I are great. We had great conversations throughout the offseason. Had a fun one last night in his office till later on. So, it is what it is. I'm an adult. I knew what I was getting into. I knew the fine that was coming, and also knew how much I wanted to be in Egypt. I wish there hadn't been a conflict scheduling-wise, but, was what it was.
Hilarious. I knew how much I wanted to be in Egypt. He also knows that any headline is going to generate even more talking points, interest, segments, and that's kind of what Aaron Rodgers' MO has been really over the last, 4 or 5 years.
Okay, but here's what I don't understand. You're a rich person, and I don't mean to get in your wallet here. I'm sure the Jets would have paid the cancellation fee with Delta to get your money back for your trip to Egypt, right? I don't understand what you mean there was a conflict. My job told me my schedule is different than I thought it was. I am no longer committed to doing this thing I said I could do. I don't understand. As a leader of the football team, I don't think he really needed to be there for OTAs. I get that. But I don't like the excuse. The excuse of, I had this prior commitment to go to Egypt. No, dude, you can afford to cancel it and do it at another time, the rest of the summer when you are not needed at your job. That's all I'm saying. I think the excuse is stupid.
Think he was flying Delta to Egypt?
I mean, I don't know. I've never been out of the country, so I don't know.
You've never been out of the country?
I'm sorry. I've never been off the continent. I went to Canada twice when I was a kid.
I mean, that is out of the country, but not a long funny. But you can fly a little puddle jumper, depending on where you're at.
Okay. My point is Aaron Rodgers specifically told us that he had to be in Egypt. He was in Egypt because he wants us all to be like, why were you in Egypt? What did you do in Egypt? Did you bring peace to the Middle East? Is that why you were there, Aaron Rodgers? That's what he wants. He wants you to ask him these things, and I didn't hear the rest of the press conference. I hope no one did, because it's just the douchery that goes on with A-Rod.
It's so, it's so exhausting, and that's why you can't. I look at it as I don't even care. It's irrelevant to the conversation. What is relevant is that the Jets have a stacked roster, but a head coach who is an absolute joke and a play caller who's only there because of his quarterback. Can they win in spite of all of the media attention, in spite of all the issues that have plagued them for years at the top of the organization when the roster is so damn good from top to bottom? That's the big question.
Yeah, no, I say all that about how annoying Aaron Rodgers is, and I will absolutely have the Jets 20-1 in pocket to win the Super Bowl just because it's one of those situations when you look at all the talent. As you mentioned, this roster, the defense, the depth on the offensive line all of a sudden. We have a receiver in Garrett Wilson who somehow has put up massive numbers with garbage at quarterback to start his career. It's one of those deals where you look at the Jets, and if every possible thing goes right, which that's what needs to happen a lot of times for teams to win a Super Bowl, their upside does not match a 20-1 number to me. They should be much shorter if they reach what they're capable of being.
At the same time, there is a reason why. I have the Jets the second best pure roster in the NFL behind only Kansas City, yet power rating wise, they're not in my top five. And there's a stark reason for that.
You have to see it, right?
Exactly.
I think there's a problem we're all having in trying to project two older quarterbacks coming off Achilles injuries and Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins. Now, what do we know about Achilles? We know that it hurts athleticism. Well, the push-off and athleticism we would see like a DeMarcus Cousins in the NBA is not the same athleticism needed to play quarterback. However, every single time they throw the football, that Achilles is going to be used. I mean, I'm not exactly a doctor here. Your parents are. You might know more about Achilles than I do. But
my dad's biggest pet peeve is people like you talking about medical things on air. But I know you continue.
My point is we see someone like DeMarcus Cousins' career get derailed because of an Achilles injury. Yeah. I just think the athleticism, what's needed to play quarterback and play center in the NBA, are very different.
My dad just turns off the TV if anybody.
So he just turned our show off.
Yeah, but, well, I don't know.
I'm sorry, Dr. Wilson.
Might have made an exception.
Sorry.
I don't know. Probably just muted it for like 15 seconds. He just gets irrationally angry when it's like, oh, that looks, you know, back when the concussions would first happen. It was like, oh, he got his bell rung. Yeah, that might be him. And I'm like, stop talking about it. You have no idea what you're talking about. Anyway, speaking of things that people don't really know what they're talking about. Ooh. Yeah, it was not a great day for Deshaun Foster yesterday for UCLA. So DraftKings and a lot of other books, they have now gone. This was 6 at one point, although heavy juice to the under. For the most part this summer, it's been 5.5. I'm on the under 5.5 train. That's not like a unique position, Dustin. It's probably one of the more popular under bets this year in college football. But it wasn't like a bet I was making just because Deshaun Foster gave a bad first press conference. I mean, we've seen lots of coaches not ingratiate themselves well with the media. Now it's down to a flat 5. UCLA is getting bet against in week 1. At one point, they were an 18.5 point favorite at Hawaii. Now that's down to more like 12.5. It's just worth bringing up simply because bets like these, purely on things that have nothing to do with football, do not make any sense. The reason why you bet UCLA under is not because Deshaun Foster sounded like a buffoon at Media Day. The reason why you bet them under is because their roster is completely inept to handle a really challenging transition to the Big Ten, where they have multiple cross-country trips and have a brand new coach who has zero experience at that level whatsoever. Let's not kid ourselves on that. That's all kind of in the post-mortem of what happened at Media Days. What I wanted to point out, because for people now jumping in and saying, all right, this is an auto lock under, based on that statement or the sequencing of bizarre statements Deshaun Foster made, doesn't make any sense.
Well, let's hear from Deshaun Foster, because this is the clip that was making the rounds yesterday when he introduced himself to the Big Ten media.
Football-wise, we're just excited. You know, I'm sure you guys don't know too much about UCLA, but our football program, but we're in L.A. It's us and USC. I'm just basically excited, really. That's it. Any questions?
All right. Nice. Look, I'll be the annoying one, because I do believe this. I don't think... Whether or not Deshaun Foster is a good football coach, you can really understand that based on the press conference. Here's what I'd say of why I'm concerned about backing him as a bettor throughout the season. Okay? There was clearly no plan. And that's my issue. It's not that he's uncomfortable public speaking. It's that he clearly went up there and didn't know what he wanted to do. Didn't have a backup plan, right? People are saying, well, that's not part of coaching football. No, it absolutely is. When you take on the figurehead position of an organization like UCLA football, Division I, in a perennial top Power 4 conference, you have to have everything buttoned up. You have to have plans for everything you're doing. And it doesn't mean he's not going to have a fourth and short plan in the fourth quarter of the first game where he's getting tested. But it does lead me to think that maybe there's some details that he's not completely ironing out. And that is my concern about backing them week to week.
It's something I would have thought anyway. How many coaches come in with, we're talking zero head coaching experience at any level. And now you come into the college game, which is more politician than X's and O's guys anyway at this point. I mean, you're going to booster meetings. You're doing all sorts of public appearances. Yeah, it's obviously not a good look. And it was terrible, right? I'm just saying that should not be your only reason for betting an under. There's so many other reasons why for UCLA.
No, and look, maybe he learns from this. He goes, you know what? I can't ever go into another situation unprepared again. And all of a sudden, he's completely buttoned up. He can react a different way to this. And it's a weird scenario. He's in a situation he's never been in before. But my issue is that there was no plan. There was no backup plan. It was just grip it and rip it.
No love to like Loyola Marymount or other, you know, LA schools. It's like, come on, man. Know your region. Also, like, it's UCLA. This isn't like a community college getting put into the Big Ten. Like,
it's
we know who
UCLA
is.
It's not Weber State being added. You guys don't know where we are.
and Weber State catching strays as we come out. For Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Ben Wilson. There we go. The squirrel versus chipmunk debate. It will rage on again tomorrow as we're all done here on this edition of Sharp Money. Coming up next, VEASAN Prime Time with Tim Murray and Jonathan Von Tobel right after this.